I didn't want to live with those memories. I didn't know what to do. Because all of us were impacted that way. And in a sense, we became refugees from our culture. You know, that good way of life when we're taken into the residential schools. And I think of the profound impact it's had. Now, say, it's intergenerational, which means my children felt it, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. You know, because the dysfunction of an individual. When you're ashamed and humiliated, and you don't deal with it, you're a victim. And all victims, not just indigenous victims, all victims with untreated trauma are either living up a life of anger, anxiety and fear and depression. And they get triggered every time some of that experience they went through. And they go back to that and their body reacts in the same way. See, when I was being struck and I was being abused, my body got this jolt of adrenaline and stuff, you know, to fight or run or hide. So when you get those memories, that same amount of chemicals, your own body chemicals, goes into your body, just with a memory. So I can understand why I used to chain smoke cigarettes. One of my addictions. Because part of smoking cigarettes is a breath response. You light the cigarette, bring it to your mouth, and go, you inhale. Because your brain needs oxygen, our body needs oxygen. So when you're in hide mode, you're breathing really shallow. In your fight mode and running mode, you breathe fast. We were taught to breathe, to hide. Don't tell anybody. It became a life of secrets. Nobody's going to believe you. You know? So there I am going through these ups and downs. Then we'd look for medicine. And for one of the first ones was alcohol. I started drinking when I was 13. Of course, there's a physiological effect of feeling high. My lips were tingling when I drink the whiskey. Then I start to black out. Perfect medicine. I don't want to remember residential school. I don't want to remember abuse. So that was a perfect medicine for forgetting, but it made my life unmanageable. That's why when I talk to people, I say, you know, you must understand impact and effect, cause and effect. Because when you look at those indigenous people, because, you know, I think there's 25% of our people are in deep mental health problems. Those are the ones that we see on the street. You know, they're being triggered every day. You know, so they're using the medicine. So when you look at them, it's better to say, what happened? I wonder what happened. Rather than what's wrong with you. Because we all are victims of cause and effect. Everyone. Tall people, short people, fair-skinned people, dark-skinned people, trans people, you know. The whole thing is we all victims of that. You know, so. Anyway, so that residential school was. I honestly wish it never happened. Because it's destroyed so many lives. You know, and of course, as a survivor, I keep wondering, why is there are people that aren't accountable? Why? Of course, it goes back to the racism. Because racism, you know, that ism of that negativity, you know, that with the word ism, that we're inferior, we're not quite human. You know, so it's okay to do that to them and not do anything when somebody finds out. I think part of my disappointment, and every time I get triggered, because I still get triggered, but my life's not unmanageable anymore. You know, I get sad. When I found out about the 215 in Kamloops, I sat down and I was weeping because I walked those places there. I think, oh my God, I was walking over children. You know, and I felt sad for the family, for Indigenous people. You know, that no one seems to care, really. There's no GoFundMe things, like if a little white girl goes, I shouldn't use that term, but I'll use it, or a boy goes missing. There's a GoFundMe thing, and they raise people money for the family. I said, I wonder why that doesn't happen for Indigenous people. And I think it goes back to that, how the country was made. I say it was made in the backs of children. You know, partly. But that's, see, when I talk about residential school, it's like a fight with me. Like, I want to create harmony. It's my job as an elder. Not to go to that resentment or aggression. Because resentment is about being unfair. And aggression means I want to hurt somebody when you're aggressive. You want to cause pain. Cause pain. I don't want to hurt people. I want people to understand. You know, that every Indigenous person in this country is not immune to the impacts of residential school or assimilation or genocide. And many populations on the planet are the same. When people ask me about residential school and stuff, and some of them talk about comparing it to other crimes against humanity, I say, this is not Trauma Olympics here. You know, this is about what happened, what can we do? I don't want it to be compared to other people's hurts. Every hurt to me is the same. If I physically struck you, the hurt would be the same as when somebody hit me. There's no difference, no difference. Yeah.
So in light of this, what does reconciliation mean to you? And is it something that we can achieve? There's a lot of talk about, you know, getting to this place in Canada and, you know, as you said, even getting to this place in other jurisdictions in the world.
Yes, when I first heard reconciliation in 1995, I was working for the Residential Survivors Society. I said, oh, they want to copy South Africa. Because Mandela and the late Tutu were talking about reconciliation. And I understood, from my view anyway, was that they were saving lives by wanting to do reconciliation in South Africa. If they didn't do that to Afrikaans, the white Afrikaans, pretty well could have been all wiped out, because they were fighting for, you know, anti-apartheid there for a reason. It was brutal there. You know, so I think that's why there was a push for reconciliation by individuals in Africa, South Africa. So when it came to Canada, I said, no, it's not the same here. You know, because reconciliation means to repair a relationship that's been broken. Because when I heard that and they're saying that for us, I said, I didn't break the relationship. Why do I need to reconcile it? You have to do something to prove to me that you're truly sorry. It's like when a couple break up because somebody cheats or something. Reconcile, that means you got to really prove it that, okay, I'm not that way anymore. That's true reconciliation, repair the relationship. So the first reconciling with Indigenous people in Canada is that statement of accountability of harm by the ones that done, by the responsible for the harm, which in this case would be the government of Canada and the churches. It's historical harm, it's what makes it so difficult to talk about in the settling. So when I thought about it, me reconciling as a Statlium with Canada, that's a very tough one. Because if we're going to talk fee simple, the amount of gold and trees and other minerals they took out of my territory is probably in the trillions and trillion dollars until today. They made a dam there to generate electricity for Vancouver. Right in my town, you know, it affected our hunting ground, our fishing ground, our lives. I was doing some studies for my people, and we found out that BC Hydro, you know, everyone pays a crown. If you cut a tree, you got to pay stumpage fees. If you use water, you got to pay fees. That to generate that electricity for Vancouver and to use that water, they made a dam and drilled holes through the mountains. They pay the federal government a year. Shows you how much they make a year. And I said, if we got 25% of that, people would have no problems. Because this was at the beginning, right? So how do I reconcile with the governments when it's so blatantly unfair? You know, like you and I can develop a relationship. We can talk and listen to each other, you know. So that part, I think, is the easy part. Government to government, I accept myself as never happen. You know, and I'm not bitter about it. You know, I don't lose sleep of it. You know, over it. I sleep good every night. But so reconciliation is. I keep getting surprised at how people use words, but never ever look at the roots of those words, where they come from, what they mean. So when people are saying we're going to do reconciliation, sometimes they use a legal description or how it turned up in the courts. Actually, reconciliation is a court-mandated thing for all Canada. It's supposed to reconciliate with Indigenous people. Part of a settlement agreement because of what happened at the residential schools in the class. The class action lawsuit was, the original class action was about that there was harm done to families and culture of people, Indigenous people in Canada, because sexual abuse is already handled in the civil courts. So a class action is something different. So when finally a judge accepted the class action, the Liberal government at the time said, because the judge accepted it. And any time you get sued, one of the things they move towards is settle out of court. Because court costs are exorbitant, you know, cost of lawyers and judges and clerks, everything costs so much money. So they try to settle out of court. So they said, we'll settle out of court, but only about their children. Because the class action included the children. And remember, it's about the destruction of the family structure, which is a culture, and the culture, which is a language. So they would have to repair those families, which is a lot of treatment, you know. And culture, it means revive the languages and things like that. So, One of the lawyers I was with, I'd hung around with a lot of lawyers for 14 years, you know, saying, oh, Jerry, if this went to court and you guys won, it'd be billions and billions of dollars. So they settled out of court. And they said it was the largest out-of-court settlement at that time against the state of Canada. But they got out dirt cheap, in my view. You know, so... And part of that was TRC, truth-telling and reconciliation, part of that out-of-court settlement. Commemoration, you know, people can commemorate their survivors, put up a plaque or something. You know, and there was some Healing Foundation dollars, and it wasn't a foundation. If it was, it would still be here, you know. So again, the use of words without sincerity. It's actually, Paulo Freire said at best, he says, false generosity. You know, so, yeah, so reconciliation, we do need to have a relationship. We need to be inclusive. Because we've been locked out of the economy. You know, we still are in a lot of ways. We still can start a business. I can start a business in Brandon. I live in Brandon now. But our communities have a hard time starting a business. They got no capital. Their population keeps growing, and the size of the reservation doesn't grow. So they got to use all their land for housing. And, you know, so it's... So reconciliation, I think people really need to understand, okay, well, we can do it one-on-one, but for a community, their culture, their way of life, you know, their food, you know, it's when I think of the poverty, like I grew up in a residential school. I'd go to town and I'd see swimming pools and playgrounds, gymnasiums, skating arenas, movie theaters and stuff, and I'd go home and the kids seemed to have nothing. And I'd be resentful. You know, so it's... One of my elders told me, he says, Jerry, Indian reserves are minimum security prisons. There's no way getting around it, he says, you know. So he's one of my elders. That means he's, you know, one of my teachers. Yeah, so it's a residential school and reconciliation. I see the good coming out of that TRC, the calls to action. There are individuals and institutions that say, we want to change, we want to follow that call to action. And that takes a lot of work to change a policy, to change an attitude amongst your staff. It takes a lot of work. You got to have a plan. So I've helped some groups with their plans around implementing TRC calls to action and justice in different areas. And then they look at what they have to do. So they're doing it. But it's going to take years and years. They have to first develop, rewrite policy, make new policy, do training, do all of those things. And once they have the plan made, then they have to implement it. And it takes 10 years for a plan after implementation to show its outcomes. So this is no instant coffee fix here. And I feel that we all have to understand this. Otherwise, we'll hear words like reconciliation is dead. Reconciliation hasn't happened. It hasn't started. You know, and rightfully so. In most places, it hasn't. But there are people out there that are seriously wanting to do something. It's like, that's when I really understand. Don't you throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know? So I applaud the one day, yes, we want to do something. And I want to wake up the others, hey, you better do something. You know? for your soul's good, you know. And I was talking to, we had a meeting, and I think it's 95 or 96, about the court cases with the Catholic Church, United Church, Methodist, the different churches that were being part of the lawsuits. Anglicans were saying, oh, our diocese is going to be bankrupt. Where that residential school was sitting, we're going to be bankrupt. And the Catholics said, we just want everybody here to know we're not going to pay anything about loss of culture because we're trying to promote it. And it got to be my turn to talk because we're in the sharing circle. I said, okay, you have a choice here. You can be morally bankrupt or financially bankrupt. You choose. I said, if Jesus come back today, he would tell you to fix it. Things that were done in his name. I said, as to loss of culture, I said, my mother went to St. Mary's, first language was Statlium. It's all she could speak. And she told me they would strap them, beat them for speaking their language. She said they would scatter uncooked rice on the floor, and these little girls would be kneeling on this rice, holding Bibles out. You know, and if their hands lowered, they'd strap them for speaking their language. And she says there were girls that just refused, and they'd shave their head. And they would still speak their language, and they put a needle in their tongue. And I'm going, whoa, I'm looking at my mom. Because I resented my parents for not teaching me the language. Remember, resentment's about, it feels unfair. It's not right. I forgave her. My dad, they were protecting me for that assimilation policy. Get the Indian out of the chalk. You know, so. Yeah, it's my... My hope is that there is inclusivity with indigenous peoples. Because inclusive means you're part of. It's hard for us to say inclusive because many of us believe it's ours. We're here first. I got thousands of years of relatives buried in the... How many years, how many generations do you have? I'll say that to Canadians sometimes. Then I'll add, part of my healing was, I say, you must belong. I've concluded you belong here because you got people buried in the ground just like me that connect you to the earth here. So you must ask yourself, what am I doing to deserve to live in such a beautiful country? What am I doing? We must become stewards of this land. We belong here. Yeah. So reconciliation is a long process. It could be seem to be made complex, but it's just so simple. I've talked to many groups. How many of you had a cup of tea with an indigenous person without talking about politics or anything, just get to know each other? Not one hand would go up. We are segregated, you know, and I say, you know, you people, if you go sit with those indigenous people, you'll find out they got a wonderful sense of humor, they're generous, they're smart, they're intelligent, you know, so go have a cup of tea with them, you know. Yeah, but part of racism is to create fear. So when they were saying we're devil worshippers, that created a lot of fear. Because in 1492, there's a great big fear about hell and Satan. People were afraid to get excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church because you're going to be condemned to burn forever in hell. And people used to take those things very seriously. So that's why when they said those indigenous people speak the devil's language, they use the devil's tools. It gave people permission to burn us at the stake, like they were doing with people in Europe. you know, and there's no second thoughts about planting small amongst my people. 85% of the Statlium population died from smallpox pandemic. You know, that's a lot of people. When I first, one of my elders told me there were smallpox blankets, I couldn't believe it. I said, no. Who would want to kill children, babies, women, elders? It can't be true. It can't be. You know, that's what I was saying to myself. Then it dawned on me, it was those ones that were in love with power were doing this. Not everyone's in love with power. It's a sickness. Because our part of ours was about the power of love and respect. That's what we're in love with. And we discouraged people from being in love with power. You know, so those are contrasting ideologies there. But the ideology from the Europeans was by very few of them. Very few colonizers. You have to be appointed by the king and queen to be a colonizer. If you're not appointed, you're a settler or an immigrant or a refugee. You know, so I hear people calling themselves settlers, and the settler in the truest sense, it means you've got free land for coming to Canada. That's a settler. That's a real definition of a settler in the sense of colonization. And many are immigrants simply looking for a good place to live. People want to farm, they want to start a business, they come here. They were immigrants. Then there are refugees that were being killed in their own country. Of course, now we got climate refugees too. You know, so, yeah. So, I think it's easier for Indigenous people to reconcile than it is for Canadians. Because it's in our nature to be generous, to be forgiving, to be kind. Another long answer for reconciliation.
Thanks to Robin for that conversation, part one of that conversation with Elder Jerry. You'll hear the next part next week on Thursday. Democracy Now! Is up next. We'll hear just a little bit of Kim Wardle as we leave. See you next time. Something's about to happen, would you say? I know my darkness will not go away. So I threw away logic, so I find a way. Will we be okay? Tell me we will be okay.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Ukraine has been aggressed by Russia, and there are unbelievable suffering in Ukraine, and at the same time telling us not to act on the multiple bombing and absolute suffering of the people of Gaza.
The International sounds the alarm in its annual human rights report, saying the world has entered an era devoid of international law. We'll speak with the Secretary General of Amnesty International, Agnès Kayamal. But first, we go to Gaza to get the latest on the ground as bodies continue to be recovered from mass graves.